I'm here with, what, tell me your name, and because I'm not too familiar with who you are.
Jenna Mamina.
Jenna Mamina, who is a recording artist, right?
Yes, I sing and produce and write and work with this incredible producer over here, Cookie Marenko.
Okay, say hello, Cookie.
Hello.
And we're here at the audio show, of course, and it's really unusual to have the artist come and listen to the music. The artists that I know, who are basically kind of rock and roll people, they don't really get into the high-end audio. Do you have a high-end audio system?
I do not, but I go to her house.
Do you have a high-end audio system?
Yeah. I have a recording studio and a lot of gear.
Okay, what me and my associate here are kind of listening for is that point in which the super high-end audio is sounding better than what the recording engineer heard. And we're trying to get at or below that bar. So do you have any opinions about all of these speakers and all of these systems that are getting more than you heard when you mixed it or mastered it? You mixer or master it both?
I do it all.
Yeah, so are you hearing things? You must be hearing things that you didn't hear when you first made it. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? What do you think about that?
Well, one of the difficulties in this room is actually getting the room tuned to the speakers. And most of the time what you're going to find is the very large speakers aren't well suited for the small rooms. So, you know, you've got issues there. But I record in DSD 256. And my speaker systems, I have probably five different speaker systems that I listen through. So every set of speakers and amplifiers is going to be different. In fact, I don't use tubes in mixing because they color the sound too much. But, actually one of the ways I reference speakers when I'm setting up a room is I have a particular recording where I can hear the foot taps very low in the bottom end. And if I don't hear those, I know there's something wrong. But pretty much, you know, I've heard enough systems where if I'm hearing something I didn't hear in the studio, there's something's wrong with the system. Whether it's like an exaggerated mid-range or, you know, and it could be just reflections off the wall.
Right. Okay. So that's where you are. So it's good. It's a good thing to have all this high-end stuff, and you think it's some of the best stuff. It's easy for you to judge, right, actually, because it's like it's not going to make it worse.
No. In fact, when I worked for Windham Hill back in the late 80s, and that was considered a high-end label 30 years ago, I didn't have a high-end system. In fact, most professional audio engineers don't listen on high-end systems.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, yeah.
I do. But then I've been coming to these shows for 10 years. We offer DSD 256 downloads. Jenna's music is all recorded in DSD 256. So we specialize in this. We cater to the audiophile. And I know a lot of my buddies think I'm crazy. We do not record to Pro Tools. We don't record to PCM. Not saying anything's wrong. It's just not what I want to hear. So if you know, depending on what you start with, there's a lot of, you know, it starts with the recording. If you don't have a great recording setup, it's just going to get worse and worse and worse at every stage of the, of the process.
Well, are you unusual? Because I don't know anybody. I never see these people in, I never see the recording engineers, the mastering engineers in these shows. And the ones that I've known they're interested in it, but not so interested to come to a show or something like that. So it's good. I'm glad to see you here.
Yeah, I wish more of my buddies were here too, because now that we're a store and we sell other labels besides Blue Coast Records, we also sell the San Francisco Symphony and Mack Avenue. But the difficulty is actually getting a great recording. And most of my engineer buddies don't consider the audiophile as, they think we're eccentric. And they never come to these shows, even though I try to explain, you know, these are the people really listening. But I was like that 30 years ago, too. I thought my buddies who were listening to my music that I mixed on $100 speakers were a little crazy having, you know, like $20,000 system. Now I get it. So we did a lot of work with Sony, so I got a pair of the AR-1s. So they gave me a set of AR-1s plus a Nelson Pass. And Jenna, you've sat in front of
them. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I almost said no because I didn't know where I was going to put them. But I put them in the studio, and the artist now can sit in the couch position and feel what it's like to be an audiophile. And I have pictures of Jenna sitting on the floor just entranced. And they are so glad to hear, because like Jenna, most artists aren't in a position. They're touring all the time and they don't really have the money. I mean, not every artist has become a millionaire. In fact, most of them are well below middle class income.
It's especially outside the United States.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So
here in the Bay Area. Well, which is challenging at best.
In the Bay Area, you said, right?
Yeah. Bay Area is one of the worst places I've found for an artist to live because it's just too expensive. And most of our audience, actually, for what we do, which is acoustic music, specializing in artists who actually perform and can live, our audience is coming from outside the United States. And we have an artist, Fiona, who's going to be in China for 5 weeks. Jenna's been spending more time in Europe. A lot of our jazz buddies, they can only play in Europe. And I don't know if you remember Butch Morris or someone like Carla Bley, who are legends in the industry for jazz. They couldn't get a gig in the United States. And being in the Bay Area is even harder.
Well, yeah, some artists have the problem of the, the tapes being bootlegged as well. So, and in overseas markets, especially in Asia. So, yeah, that even makes it even harder.
Fans. I mean, people show up at my gigs, and I'll be playing at a cafe in Paris or in London, and people will be sitting there, and I go, how did you hear about it? They go, oh, I heard about you on Blue Coast.
Yeah, so.
Thank you, Cookie.
Well, let me ask you, since I got you, and it's hot in here. I mean, I don't know. I didn't know it was going to be so hot. But two questions. First one's a little weird, but I'm wondering, when you listen to yourself when you're recording, you're kind of like creating your art. When you hear something on something like a high-end audio system, do you think if you had the system and the detail available to you when you were recording, you might have made any type of changes as an artist? I mean, in other words, are you sitting there and you're saying, this doesn't sound like I was imagining it? You know, when I first, in other words, you're hearing the system in a different way because it's a high-end audio system than when you were recording it. Would that change the way you perform and record music at all? I worry about that a little bit.
Well, with what we do at Blue Coast with Cookie, it's all live. So it's right there in an instant. In that instant is what's happening.
And if I could add, typically what happens, like we've had the Audiophile Society over while Jenna was recording with Matt Rawlings one time. And
in the room.
They were in the recording room while Jenna and Matt plays piano and Jenna was singing. And their impression was, Jenna's voice is actually very soft. When I do a playback, I'm elevating her voice so it's audible above the piano. But when she's live, it's very small. So when she hears it, she's not really hearing it from the same perspective that you might be as an audience member.
I heard things in there that I had not heard before. Because
yeah, that's what I'm saying. So that doesn't, I guess since you're performing it live, I mean, that's is a little bit different. But does that change in any way the way you, get the point across, the way you create your art?
I think what I've learned to do when we're recording at Cookies with John Arbour, who's the pianist on that particular piece, is I have to stand in a certain place. And I've at times been standing next to him in front of an open piano, and I pushed my voice. And I realized maybe third, and I felt so bad because Cookie spends a lot of time positioning the mics and everything. And I go, can I move 10 feet and stand behind him? So he and I don't even have eye contact, but we have a spirit contact. And it made it better.
Oh, yeah.
But because I could hear that I was pushing my voice. And it probably would be good for certain recordings, but we're so delicate and precise. Space is the third instrument in what we do.
So it has affected the way you perform and you're.
Just where I'm standing, pretty much, I think.
You're listening to the Uncommon Core podcast. Our Instagram is Instagram/UncommonCorePodcast.
What about you personally? How did you get involved in high-end audio? Because like I said, most musicians I know are like, yeah, that's interesting, but, you know, they're not going to go out with it.
Well, I have a cassette player in my car, if that answers anything.
No, that's cool. I have a cassette player in my car, too.
And I still listen to CDs, and I have albums. Cookie. Cookie turned me on to high-end. She's one of the...
Well, you know, Janet's... I've been in a fortunate position living in the Silicon Valley where I've done a lot of work for tech companies. So, for instance, Liquid Audio, 20 years ago, introduced the first MP3 downloads. And I was their engineer who would record the live concerts. And so what I would do was I was a liaison to a lot of independent artists. And so when they needed somebody to do trial and error tests, I'd call on my artists, Jenna and a few others that I knew would come and deliver. And so we did a lot of the early tests with Jenna, and Jenna became an artist that I could rely on. I got to know Jenna because she hired me to record her first couple of albums, and then I relied on her to come and help me out, you know, some of these tech, new advancements in technology. And then later on when I started the label, she was just a natural to come and perform.
Right. Yeah, it's another thing. One more quick thing, and I'll let you guys go, and also let your little doggy go here. How old is he, by the way?
Lillian Pearl. She's 8 and some months.
Well, you know, I was going to say at the New York Audio Show, you don't see too many women in the shows, and that was... It's a kind of impressive. I'm glad that you're here. I mean, the other one I was in was Rondi from Krell, and she's a designer. She's got to be at the show. But it's even more rare to have a dog at the show.
Yeah.
So I'm very impressed that the dog is here.
And she also sits in the... She sits in with Cookie when we're recording. One thing I don't know if you know about when the whole Liquid Audio happened, which was 20 years ago, I also... was picked up by a card company, a greeting card company, where they took bits of songs, and one of the songs, I am a big James Taylor fan, and we've actually done a record of James Taylor music, but the second song we ever recorded was Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight, and that was in a greeting card, and I did a gig last week, and people came to the gig. I said, how did you first hear of me? They said, oh, my husband gave me a greeting card, or a card, that had your song in it.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was the first greeting card company that had audio attached, and because of, you know, the Liquid Audio Association and being in the Bay Area, they came. I gave them Jenna, and, you know, and Jenna's thrown people my way. It works, you know.
Okay, so let me just get the information from you guys. Let me get it from you first. You mentioned you were selling some of this stuff. Do you have a website?
Mm-hmm. Bluecoastmusic.com.
Bluecoastmusic.com.
Yeah. Yes.
Why Blue Coast? What's that named after?
You know, I live in the Bay Area. I love the ocean. And as I was thinking, what do I want to call it? It was probably 15 years ago. And I thought there's something about the ocean and the stability and the newness and the freshness and a combination of every day is new and every day is old, and it's passion.
And the blue note. Blue, for some reason, is the color.
You know, I couldn't get away. Originally it was called Red Sky Records, but I found after, because I also love sunsets, so I went with Red Sky Records. And we all loved it, except turns out a heavy metal label already had the name. Years later, after I changed it to Blue Coast, he said, hey, I'll sell it to you for a dollar.
Well, you don't want any of those guys showing up to your concert and 2.5 hours later saying, hey, I don't think this is the right band. But that brings me up to one last question for you, and then we'll get like maybe a place that people could go for you. Have you thought of doing other kinds of music? I mean, you know, one of the things, it's not really a problem, but one of the things with high-end audio is it's all jazz. Not that there's anything wrong with jazz, but, I mean, I don't know where everything else is. But do you do other kinds of music? Have you ever experimented or thought of or wanted to do anything else?
I do. I've been in rock bands. I've been in bluegrass Americana bands. I've done freestyling and hip-hop groups. Being in the Bay Area, I'm kind of fit into a lot of different folk, singer-songwriter, straight.
Okay, that's great.
So, I'm sorry, you say that?
No, I sing songs. Yeah. I don't identify with one genre or another. I sing songs, and if it sticks, great.
Yeah, I don't know why more people aren't like that. I mean, you know, but at least it doesn't seem that way, and the audience doesn't know. You record music, you're saying, right? You're on other albums, right?
I do. I have.
What's the heavy? What's the death metal band you sing for?
Actually, there's a record that I want to do, but it probably will be on Blue Coast in the next year, and it has to do with Metallica.
So this is like a tease? What does it have to do with Metallica?
This is the one you've been telling me about?
Oh, no, that's another record. No, I've always wanted to do a record of Metallica covers.
Oh, you're going to cover Metallica. You're not going to work with them, you're going to cover them.
Metallica. Mamina on Metallica.
That's why not? And are you going to you're not going to make it jazz though, or are you?
I'm going to make it Jenna.
Okay. Yeah, you know, some people can do a really good job at these covers and doing it their own way. It's really interesting. I mean, some music is more difficult than others, you know. But, okay, so that's it. I will basically, okay, so what's your website? I guess I should have that. Do you have like a place that you like that people go to where they can find all of your art and your recordings?
My own website is jennamamina.com, but a lot of my music is, again, on Blue Coast Records.
What's on your website that's not on this one?
I need a new website. Actually, and I'm also on another, I work with a guitarist by the name of Rolf Sturm, who lives in New York, and we tour quite a bit all over the world, and it's jenna-rolf.com, and you can find all of our stuff on YouTube and the usual places, but Blue Coast is where I like to listen to my music.
What's your next album coming out? What's the name of it? What's your last album?
Spark. No, Begin to Dance was the last record. No, actually, Everyone I Love is Here. I have different groups. I have a band called Jenna and the Charmers, and we have a new recording out of covers of anything from Squeeze to Alison Krauss to some of my original music, and then what I do with Rolf, and a lot of that is also available through Blue Coast, through Cookie Marenko.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
I've got what you need if you can handle me. I'm not a millionaire.
Outside of town and searched for shooting stars. Then we rolled all the windows down and bathed in the warm air. We drove for miles till we came upon an empty house on a deserted farm somewhere. So we broke in and called it home. We made love on the roof. Started playing on its own.
Money isn't everything. Only
And you can introduce yourself. Tell me who you are and how you're affiliated with the show first.
Hi, my name is Vivian Lamb, and I am Constantine's wife, but also who's the producer of the California Audio Show. But also, I am the general manager of the California Audio Show.
Now, how did you decide who to bring to the show? Was it just anybody that you can get to come to the show, or did you hand pick the people?
I think we cast a wide net. Again, I'm not an audiophile, so it was Constantine who really gave me a list of folks to call and talk to, and that's basically how we.
Well, is the show going okay so far? We're in the middle of it, and you've got a lot of people here. Is it doing okay? I mean, are you happy with it?
Oh my gosh, we've run out of badges today, and we're having to go for backup supplies on how we're going to get people with their name tags. So we'll be ready for tomorrow, but today we've kind of run out of supplies.
And what we're in right now is the room where they're selling records, which is a big part of the thing. They're selling old records and rare records, and there's I see reference recordings and a couple of other places. Is this a big part of the show, or is it a part that's changed over the years, or how is this the retail section in your show working?
It's working well, I believe. I have been a part of the show for the last 4 years since Constantine and I have been married. And today, in terms of the, there's a lot of traffic that comes here.
There's a lot of people. It's crowded for the people listening. This part is crowded. And compared to New York, the New York show, which I was in a couple years ago, the audio rooms with the LPs and everything were small, and it was crowded, and everybody's bunched together. This one, it's good. You have a lot of space, and there's people talking, and there's a good energy inside of it. And I just like that about this particular show, because some of the other shows have this section. That's why I asked. It's a little bit, it's, like I said, it's too much. But this looks like it's going really well. I mean,
it's going really well today. We have we have this vendor over here, Chemist Audio, who is brought in their record cleaner, but they even do more than that. They do restoration of records, and he's just been packed the whole venue the whole time since we've started. And but all the tables have been well attended.
There's a lot more that you could expand on it. I'm with the Stereophile and a couple of the magazines and a lot of the accessory companies. You don't have them all here. Barry is full of them. What do you plan on doing in the future, maybe for next year? Do you have any ideas?
I'm sure Constantine will have some ideas, and we'll talk through them, but definitely work on, we're always working on expanding and looking at bringing in even new people. We have, reached out to different dealers as well as retailers to, come to the show, around more than outside of the Bay Area. So.
And what about as a woman, because there's more women here than there were at the New York Audio Show. There was only I know there was Rondi from Corral. I can't remember anybody else.
She's an exhibitor, though.
Yeah, she's a manufacturer and an exhibitor, right. And but now here there's a lot more. What are your ideas? I mean, did you, before you met Constantine, were you into audiophile stuff or not? Were you interested in the music?
Of course, I listened to music, but I was not an audiophile. I'd never heard of the word before, but I quickly learned that there's huge boxes and very heavy equipment, so it takes up a lot of space. However, now after listening to his systems and even watching television through his system, I just love it. But I still don't, I'm still not a, technical audiophile, but I do appreciate really good sounding systems when I'm, listening to music. And
so the thing is, you kind of, some people have an epiphany with it, like, wow, this is this, I didn't know that you can hear this. Other people come into it slowly. It sounds like you're kind of, it's kind of growing on you a little bit. Is that kind of the way you'd say?
Yes, I think that's a good characterization.
And what is your preference for the kind of a thing? Do you have any kind of preferences for the type of music you listen to, or the type of system you like to listen to, or?
Well, what's funny is when you live with an audiophile and a show producer, he listens to a lot of music that he likes. And so I've learned to listen to jazz and Japanese music and music that I wouldn't even be exposed to.
What kind of music do you like? What do you like to listen to?
I'm from the 90s, so I listen to the 80s and the 90s.
Well, pop or rock or?
Pop, but I do like acoustic music where it's just a guitar or just a bare minimum strings, not a whole lot of heavy metal or even, you know, a lot of instruments in the background. I like it.
Well, it's okay. You can prefer pop. I mean, I think that might be a misconception actually as well, is that people think that they have to have a high-end system for jazz and classical music, but depending on the system you buy, you can hear really good stuff with the, you know, if you get the right system. Who's your favorite artist?
Gosh, today... That's a good question. I mean, I was just talking to my sister yesterday. We like listening to Pink. We can sing with her, and she's not one of our contemporaries, but I like folk music. In, you know, they're songwriters, so they have that aspect to them, where they write a lot, some of their own songs or a lot of it.
Yeah, the some of the artists today, it's kind of hard to. They kind of aren't writing, penning down lyrics and music like they used to do in the old days. But what is your kind of like take on it, on the kind of system? If you were going to get one for yourself, would you get like a little mini monitor? Are you impressed by the big expensive systems? Where do you come down on it? Everybody kind of has the thing when they get into high end audio that impressed them. So what is it that impressed you about it? Do you like the big expensive stuff or the small stuff or what?
So I think this is a great question. We last year after the Cass 8 show. My husband, they brought the Destination Audio horn speakers over to our house.
Oh, no, horn speakers. Now, horn speakers are very interesting. Some people don't like the horn speakers, the way they look. Other people like the horn speakers because of the way they sound or the way they look. So horn speakers, you had horn speakers in your house.
I had huge horn speakers in our house. And at first, I was asking, you know, my husband, when are they going to be gone from our living room? And but I have to say that by the time that they were taken back, I think they came in June. So we had them for a number of months, over 9 months, less than a year. But they came and took them, and the space seemed, you know, empty. And, you know, the movies that we were watching or the music that we listened to, I miss the horn speakers, actually. But it's not like I knew it without having been immersed in it in the past.
Yeah, there's something you get nostalgic about. I remember when I first got into home high-end audio, and I had a, you know, girlfriend that experienced that. It was the... MIT Music Hose, which is like speaker cable, and they're skeptical, like this is not going to make a difference. And then they made a big difference, and that kind of sold them on it. It's like, oh, this isn't all BS, you know? And then the certain speakers, but you get nostalgic for it. So that was your thing, the horn speakers. What was the brand again?
It was Destination Audio. And I have to say that I told my husband, so then Bohemian Rhapsody came out on video. And I was like, gosh, I wish we had the horn speakers so that we can watch them from home. And that would have been fun.
What can you tell then? What is there anything you could say or anything you could do as part of the show to bring more women into it? Because I don't know what the resistance is, but you know, it's all these. This show is actually, like I said, much better than the New York show. New York show was all middle-aged white guys, you know, and this show is much more diverse. Maybe it's the Bay Area. I don't know what it is. Do you think there's anything you could tell people who are a little bit skeptical that might bring them in? Because I have different people listen to stuff. I do fashion and all that other stuff. What would you tell some of the women that, you know, anything you could say you think that might be able to interest them in that, in high-end audio?
I think for me, it, you know, knowing Constantine, he talked about it a lot, and, you know, just over time I became interested. You know, he would always ask me and invite me to go to different sessions or reviews that people were having, if people were giving a demo.
But why did you resist, I guess, is kind of part of my question, is what is it, why are they so resistant? I mean, it's open to everybody.
Well, I don't read my husband's reviews, so they're too technical for me. But what I can connect to is just listening to music. So for me, keep it, you know, I, as soon as we get talking about, you know, the monobox or the preamps, and I'm not interested in that. So it's what I'm, you know, the main functionality is the music and what I'm listening to.
You have to spend some money on high-end audio, but some people don't want to spend over $500 on their system. And I think the problem is that they're just not open to listening to it, and they don't like hearing people talk about that stuff. It's a turnoff. So you just say, come in, listen. That's what I've told people too, right? Just come in and listen.
I agree, yeah.
I know that some of the people in New York, and Steve Guttenberg, the audiophiliac, has talked about this before, but there are less expensive systems, and some of the shows are trying to bring in the low-end systems, you know, the $500,000, $2,000 systems instead of these big fancy things. Is there anything you guys are doing in that direction or you're thinking of?
Recently, we visited a demo in San Francisco that was being held by, the name of the company escapes me right now.
Okay.
But in terms of, you know, we did invite them to come, but they would be, you know, they would be speakers that could sit on your mantelpiece, you know, and I don't know that we have any of those here, but we invited them to come because we want diversity in, you know, for the attendees that come to the show, and we're open, you know, to that. So I think I don't even want to say what I thought the speaker names were because I don't remember at this point in time.
Yeah, I mean, that would be something I would like to see, and a lot of people would like to see, is to bring people in, something to introduce people into the industry with a lower-priced item so they don't have to invest so much. Yeah, also Chesky, I don't know if he was interested. Did you ask Chesky? He was at the New York Auto Show. I talked to him. Did you? What about Chesky Records and some other record labels?
Off the top of my head, I don't recall, but I'd have to take a look.
Yeah, well, so you guys are open to people coming to you? Is that how they would do it if they want to come to the show and they have a small audio company?
And I would say they can reach out to us at info at caaudioshow.com, where we can, you know, call them back as well. So basically, yeah, they'll reach out to us. And then if they're on our mailing list, then we communicate with them throughout the whole year.
Yeah, because there's other people that could be here as far as the records, as far as the lower price stuff and their headphone companies and people like Shit Audio. You familiar with them?
Yes, yes. And they were here last year. So we'd love to have, you know, the headphone space.
Yeah, but it's a pretty good show, and I say I'm particularly impressed with this room we're in right now because, like I say, from the shows and the things that I've done, people want to come, and maybe they don't want to buy an audio system, you know, that day, but they would buy records, and they would buy this kind of thing, and it's really nice to see everybody. Well, okay, well, once again, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Uncommon Core podcast with Thomas Howell. Be a patron at our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/Uncommon Core. And if you would like to see Tom and Q cross the country in a van, you can find 10-minute videos of the trip at www.goingyonder.com. All this and more, including links, pictures, and personal essays, can be found on our webpage at www.goingyonder.com. uccpodcast.com or uncommoncorepodcast.com. I'm Sato Goldsmith. Thanks for listening.
Oh.